Welcome to the Concordia Publishing House podcast, where we consider everything in the light of Jesus Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I'm your host, Elizabeth Pittman. Living freely and learning how to exercise two kingdom citizenship faithfully to God in service to our neighbor are things that our world needs now more than ever. Do you agree? What does this look like in practice? On the show today, our guest, the Reverend Dr. Gregory Seltz, is going to help us unpack the tension of two kingdom citizenship. Greg is the director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We have a bit of a loaded topic, I think, any day, but especially right. This time of year where we're headed into election season and, you know, the rhetoric is heating up. And I understand, like, studying history, the rhetoric is nothing really new, but given technology and communication, we're feeling it a whole lot more than we may have in the past.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's a lot for us to all take in. Before we dive into the heart of it, let's start at the very basics. When you talk about two kingdom citizenship, what does that look like? Or what does that mean?
Well, I try to keep it simple because when you think about two kingdom citizenship, all you're really saying is God is at work. And so the first thing we're affirming is that God is at work in the world, but he works two different ways. And so that's one of the hardest things, to keep that intention. God works to preserve the world. We call that his left-hand kingdom work. And then, of course, he works to save the world, and that's through the person and work of Jesus Christ alone. In that left-hand kingdom work, though, he works through even non-Christians. So people, he works through moms and dads. He works through government officials, police. He works through entrepreneurs and business people. But that's just to keep the world from going to hell. I mean, it's really to keep, you know, basically what I call a basement floor of civility so that we don't, you know, annihilate ourselves. And he works through all kinds of people, not to save us, but to preserve this world so that, of course, we can hear the good news of his salvation. So that's two kingdoms. God is at work. So now let's be faithful to his work. Are we talking about his preserving work? Are we talking about his saving work? So Christians learn how to differentiate those two questions.
Well, and we see that even in the Bible, when Jesus tells us to render unto Caesar what is Caesar and to right. God what is God's, where we are called to honor the authorities, and we should be honoring everyone. So what does this start to look like in practice?
Well, again, you know, I think we're motivated by God's moral ordering of the world. So the first thing that we ask ourselves is, what would the Father want us to do? You know, there's two questions that Christians, I think, should ask. What would Jesus do? You know, WWJD. But that's more of an evangelism, share the faith, how do I love my neighbor question. Well, how does God order the world? Well, that's a what would the Father have us do type of question. So we ask those questions. And by the way, Jesus actually did everything the Father wanted done. Remember, he said, I'm here to fulfill the law, not to actually get rid of it. So we use the Ten Commandments and we start to see God's ordering of the world, and we want to be faithful to, you know, presenting how God orders the world. So if we're talking about laws that are out there in the world, they should at least reflect or have some kind of root in the kind of God's ordering of the world, the Ten Commandments view of the world. And that is something that we as Christians need to actually use to engage our culture for the sake of its own preservation. That's hard work. But that's the kind of question we're asking. What would the Father have us do? Then we got to share with our neighbor who may disagree with us why that's good for them too.
Well, you bring up our neighbor.
Right.
You know, this is a time where it doesn't matter what time of year over the dinner table you bring up, you know, religion and politics, and people can get really animated.
Right.
So when we have these topics come up, how can we have a civil conversation in a way that's helpful and productive and isn't flame-throwing or talking past each other? Because these conversations are going to happen a lot in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Now, and we've been doing Liberty Alerts on this. We call them Liberty Alert Lives. And we're telling people, here's how you talk to your friends. Here's how you talk to your neighbors. Here's how you talk to the person across the fence. The first thing is, and I always tell people, if you're trying to reflect God's moral ordering of the world, obviously you're doing it with a lot of humility because you're just as broken as everybody else. So that's the first attitude. But the second thing is, you're trying to say, if God orders the world, it's because he loves us too. And so don't just say, here's my opinion of this, or here's God's opinion of this, or here's why I believe this policy is best. Try to demonstrate why it's not just best for you, but best for the person you're talking to. And that's where I think we sometimes fall short. We tend to say, here's why I believe it. Here's why I think it's right. Well, I think we got to go another step further and say, well, here's why I think it's not just right for me, but it's right for you too, because this is God's thing, not mine. And so when we do that, we got to bring in psychological, sociological, historical data, that kind of stuff that says, hey, this is, you know, like when I fight for the family, you know, the institution of the family, I'm trying to demonstrate why it's good for society, why it's good for children, why it's good for, you know, why it's good for the civility and peace that we need in a culture. All these things are things you can bring into a conversation. And I think it helps create that civil conversation, because you're saying, here's why I think it's good for both of us.
Well, if we can find the common ground that each side agrees on and start at that level, and right, then work our way through the issues, at least we can agree that we're invested in, you know, yes, we do need to protect our children. How can we do that? What does that look like? Right. And get past the arguing for arguing's sake.
Yeah, common ground is huge. So the first thing I say is, you know, you could be talking to a non-Christian, but if they believe that, you know, there's a moral, ethical way of living life, I mean, there's common ground there. What we are starting to find out, though, is there are folks who don't believe there's any truth anymore. They don't believe there is a moral common ground. They don't believe that. You're going to have a different conversation with them. Okay, there's almost no way to, but at least if you have that conversation, you might even be able to say, here's why we disagree. And they may not even understand that. So again, I believe you're right. Common ground. Start there. And then try to orient your discussion with, here's why I think this is good for both of us. And I think if you do that, at least it shows that you really are trying to persuade and you're trying to bless the person you're talking to, not just get your point across.
Have you seen that work successfully in any of the issues that we're facing these days? Have you seen a situation that could have erupted, but thanks to people being intentional about looking for ways to communicate, find the right words, find the common ground, that they were able to maybe diffuse a situation?
Yeah, I've seen it work. I got to be honest with you, though, in politics, I see people, and I always try to tell people, politics is not where this stuff works this way. You and I are talking about how to have conversations with people we care about. Politics is power, and power is about who wins and who loses. What we need to do is try to persuade and try to engage people because we care about them. So even God's left-hand work is we engage this because we care about our neighborhood. We care about our community. Even if we lose, we want to get God's voice out there because we think it's a voice that will bless. I've seen it work. But again, it's hard because I think you've got to demonstrate that I'm engaging this communication, this dialogue, because I care about you. And I think that's the only way it can actually work. Because if the person actually says, wow, we disagree, but I hear that you're trying to say why this is good for me, not just why it's good for you and I'm going to win the day. That's where I think it hinges. It hinges on that kind of thing. And if you can earn that right, I'll give you an example. I was telling some guy one time about why I vote, and I thought he was different in terms of our politics. And I said, whenever I vote, I think of you. And he was like, what do you mean? I said, well, I think of the policies that will be good for your small business. I think of the policies that will be good for you being able to do what's right for your family. I think of the policies that will be good for where you want to send your kids to school. So I think of all those things when I vote. Well, he was like, well, is that what you're voting for? And I said, yeah. And I said, the policies you're talking about actually take all those things away from you. And he went, well, I never thought of that. So it's a good way to turn the conversation. If you're saying, when I think of these things, I'm thinking about you, not me. And I don't know if that's the best way, I think, to try to start that conversation.
Well, it's a great place to start, because there, if we are to do our duty, our vocational duty to our neighbor, we should be looking at that, whether it's something that we're voting for or how we're behaving in our neighborhoods, right, and caring for the people around us. What do you say to the people who hear this and immediately go to, but church and state, we can't let religion affect that?
Well, the sad part about it is I got to ask for a lot of definitions there, because first of all, church and state, I always tell people the idea of the I call it the differentiation, not the separation, the differentiation of church and state. That's a Christian idea. Okay. So people are like, what are you talking about? I thought that was an enlightenment. No, Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. And then he told Pilate, by the way, you're still under God's control. I mean, you still owe God the right way of doing your job. So the point is this differentiation of the temporal public realm and God's eternal work. That's a Christian differentiation that the West has kind of put to use. And then the founding fathers actually put the church on the top and they put the state on the bottom. So even if you talk separation, differentiation, it's to keep the state in its place, not us. And then the final thing is, look, all law is moral. So if you mean don't be moral, don't bring your morality into this discussion, I'm sorry, but all law is a moral discussion. So you have your moral view, I have my moral view, and the question is which one is best for all of us. So that's the first thing. We just got to realize this is about, you know, a morality and a civility that we all can agree on, that we can live by. And I think we need to engage that process, because if we don't, then we're left to whatever the amorality or immorality view is out there. And that's going to rule the day. And I think Christians have to stand up for God's way of doing these things for the sake of the culture.
So how can we as Christians best engage that for the benefit of our city, state, culture?
Well, and that's a great question. And I think this is where I think Lutherans really do have a lot to say, because we, again, two kingdoms, that just means we know that this left-hand kingdom work is not God's ultimate work. So we don't have this view that if we just get the politics right, everything's going to be great. Actually, if we get the politics right, that just means things will be relatively good. It's the basement floor of our life. We don't live in the basement. We live upstairs. And so, you know, two kingdoms is like, let's get involved. Let's lay the civility down. But now that I've done that, where's the real work going to happen? It's going to happen in being a public citizen, if you will, in my neighborhood, being a neighbor to my friend, organizing boys clubs and girls clubs and apolitical things, things that are not political in nature. That's the big issue today. The big issue for us is that we're the group saying not everything's politics. That's who we are. And we're just saying we're fighting politically to keep the politics in its proper place so we can go out and be citizens and neighbors to each other and figure these things out together. So I don't want my neighborhood baseball team to be political. You know, I don't want my neighborhood boys club thing or my neighborhood gatherings that I'm doing. I don't want suddenly people have, you know, standing up on soapboxes and those things. I want to show, you know, my love and care for my neighbor as we figure these things out together. So not everything is political. And that's how we can start to say, wait a minute, what's that other way of being public? And that's where we as Christians can start saying, let's fashion that and then do the politics when you have to. But the problem is there's a group of people that everything is politics, and we've got to fight them back into their proper place, or we lose everything.
And that's a challenge. We're seeing that here in St. Louis right now with the county, where they have said no high school sports,
right?
With the exception of like tennis and golf and cross country, right. You know, so our soccer team and our football teams, they can practice, but they can't have games. And it has turned, you know, the uproar has been outrageous.
Especially when the science doesn't support it. I'm just getting so tired. I mean, you know, science, everyone just throws it around, but the science doesn't support putting our children in a box. They're the least likely to have any problems with this pandemic. And then even the herd immunity stuff over time is probably going to work its way out through kids. Then it's going to work its way out through those of us who are older. It's just crazy to do that, but it just shows kind of what government will do if we don't check them. They'll start to tell us what to do in our own homes if we don't watch it. So again, that's what we're fighting for. So the stuff, I think Christians can fight here. You know, we struggle with the word fight and serve. I think we need to learn how to fight by putting the government in its proper place, and then we need to learn how to serve to our neighbor. And so again, those are the two tensions. The fight needs to be limited, though. It needs to be limited to things like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, the institution of marriage as a liberty issue, and freedom of education. I think those are our four things. We need to fight for those things. But now that we fought for those things, we got to go out and live to our neighbor. And that's more of a how can we serve, how can we love type of thing. That tension's hard to keep, but that's a tension we need to keep.
It is a difficult tension, especially when, as you mentioned, there's the factions that make everything political. Right. And not only do they make everything political, but they are shouting it from every rooftop over and over and over again so that those of us on the receiving end of the message, that's all we're hearing. So we're really talking into, you know, a tunnel here. And it's hard to step up and say, okay, what level do we rise to fight back on this?
Well, the first thing I do, and I tell people this, is we have to quit apologizing as if we caused this. You know, if you go to any university today, 99% of the professors are going to have an anti-Christian worldview. They're going to have that. In fact, you know, it's always amazing to me. I talk to even some of our own colleagues in education, and I say, you think 99-1 is a good, healthy balance for me to send my student to that? So we walk into that every day. And we're starting to push back on that and say, no, we have a worldview that is a blessing and that can be talked about in the public square. So we need to be able to kind of fight that, but we need to understand that we didn't cause that. There's a mindset that wants to drive the Christian worldview out of the public square, and they're going to use politics to do it. And all I'm saying is that's why I'm in D.C. I'm in D.C. to fight that back so that the church can be free to be the church and the schools can be free to be the schools. And that really is the issue today. It's not about what you think about this or what you think about that. It's about the freedom to even have your opinion. And when it gets to that point and the church isn't willing to fight for the ability to use their voice, I mean, the Apostle Paul in Acts 17 just said, you didn't have the right to beat me up like that. You know? So there came a point where he used his Roman citizenship and then he winds up testifying about the gospel to the emperor. I think we're at a point like that in our culture. You know, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego moments. There is a group that would love to see us in the fiery furnace, whether we like that or not.
Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing at the center, both towards the folks on the Hill and then educating those of us that are back here in the real world.
Right.
And some of the issues that you think we need to be watching out for.
Well, you know, when we're on the Hill, we're an advocate. We're not a lobby group. We're an advocate. We visit with lots of senators and congresspeople, and we try to actually visit with those people who will listen to us talk about religious liberty and the sanctity of life. And so I always tell people, I said, please join us. Join our podcast, join our Facebook, live, join our website, because I'd love to have 100,000 or 200,000 people as my followers. Because I go in and say I represent 2.2 million people and these followers, and that usually gets a senator or a congressman's, you know how that stuff works. If you've got followers, they're like, oh, I need to listen to this person. So we advocate, and then we encourage those who are doing the hard work. They're the politicians, we're not, and there's some great ones on the Hill. So we try to undergird them, we try to support them, pray for them, even have some events where they can talk to other leaders on the Hill and realize they're not alone. The second thing or third thing we do is we educate our people how to put their citizenship to work for the sake of the gospel. And that's something we have Champions for Liberty groups, and I speak all, on weekends and things like that. We want our people to be engaged with the culture, but not to politicize the gospel. And we have a process, a lecture series that we take them through in a process. So that's kind of our work. And again, like I said, it comes down to this. Think about it this way. Can you imagine? The Lutherans now and people like us are the live and let live people in our culture. Now, that's scary to think about. I mean, we're the ones saying, look, if we disagree, just please allow me to be able to be who I am and who we are. And the group we're fighting against is saying no. And so we have to engage that politics of saying we will not let you say no to us on this. So that's religious liberty, and that's the main battle we're dealing with on the Hill. And that is a big battle, and we haven't won it yet. Right now it's good, but it could be bad very soon.
Are there some specific issues that you see on the table heading into these elections where liberty is at stake and we should really be thinking through them carefully and not just going blindly into the voting booth?
Absolutely. And in fact, right now, there are two issues. I mean, first of all, the Supreme Court has put us in a terrible position again because they did a, just like they did with Roe v. Wade, just like they did with the Dred Scott movement, they legislated something they had no business legislating. And it made one side constitutional and the other side not. The pro-life movement's taken 55 years to actually win the dialogue again in the public square because they made that bad ruling in 73. But the same thing is happening with gay marriage, and the same thing is happening with the sexual orientation laws. And what's happening is those laws are becoming the laws of the land. And if you disagree with any of those things in any way, shape, or form, you are then illegal in this culture. And, you know, I was even thinking about this. If you even preach you can't live together, you know, which is a biblical thing, you could even be cited there for hate speech if this legislation kind of comes to grip or comes to fruition. So that's called the Equality Act. There's legislation in the House right now called the Equality Act. And don't be fooled by the euphemisms. It is not the Equality Act. It is the Anti-Christian Morality Act. That I was speaking with a lawyer friend of mine and at Lions Defending Freedom, and he said, if we don't win the politics of this, he said, if that becomes law, he said, every church will have to have a lawyer on retainer because the folks are coming to either modify what you teach, which if you think about that, that's almost Orwellian, or to put you out of business. And so the schools will be the first things they attack, the schools and the universities, but they'll even come for the churches. So it's just, I wish I could say to people, how did we get here? Well, we've allowed other people to do the fighting for that religious liberty for us. And all we're saying is, please give us the right to be who we are. And I think that's a position that even people who disagree with me on these issues, they go, well, I still think you have the right to have your opinion. And so, again, I don't think it's something that's that combative with average folks. It's combative in politics, but not with your neighbor.
And it's a slippery slope. And I know that even from my time working on the Hill 8 years ago, you know, they're chipping away at this. They've been chipping away at the free. They're very patient, and it doesn't need to be all in one fell swoop. But they've been, I remember working on, it seems like almost the annual fight for the charitable tax deduction. You know, right. Years and years and years. So all these things just over time, they just keep wearing it away. And like bit by bit, the freedoms start to erode. And so we really do have to be paying attention to what's happening.
Well, and again, like you said, they've been chipping away at this. But if you go to their foundational reason why they're chipping away at it, then you understand. I had that one quote. I'm looking for it right now. It's from Robert Reich. Have you heard about his? He wrote about this and about religion in the public square. It was this thing where he basically said the battle today is between the modernists and the anti-modernists. And of course, who are we? We're the anti-modernists, right? But what he said at the very end, and you know, the quote is too long to read, but at the very end he said, a terrorist may disrupt our lives, but that's not the biggest battle we face. Well, I just said, those are fighting words. That guy actually just said the Christian worldview needs to be extinguished. And he was the labor secretary person of Bill Clinton, and he's the public policy guy at the University of California, Berkeley. So I'm saying, well, he's the one who's telling us you can't have that view and we're going to put you out of business. And I just thought, okay, what are we going to do about this, church? We can't let them silence our voice in our culture. And I think that's, unfortunately, that is the battle. And the Equality Act is one of the ways they're going to do this in almost a totalitarian way. And I think that it's gotten to this point shows that the church doesn't really know what the stakes are.
What's your advice to the church, both church corporately and then those of us in the pews each week as we look at this?
Well, again, like I said, you know, the religious liberty is something you can fight for. And I think you can talk to, again, it's not religious liberty for Christians only. It's religious liberty. And so you can fight for that. And there are religious people of different swaths who will go, thanks for fighting for that for us too. Okay, that again, you still got to then engage all these even different religious worldviews as you try to share your faith. But you can at least fight for that fundamental freedom that we have in the First Amendment. And you can tell these secularists, we're not going to let you get rid of the First Amendment. And religious liberty is part of the First Amendment and religious exercise. That's why this pandemic has been so outrageous to see them actually shut the church down. as if it's not a non-essential entity in our culture. Our founding father said, if we don't believe in the church and don't believe that God created us, we don't have unalienable rights. That's how fundamental they thought this stuff was. Well, we can't let them turn that discussion upside down. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, like I said before, understand that there's only a few things that you have to fight for politically. I think religious liberty, that's a key one. The sanctity of life, because that's sanctity of life for everybody, not just for those with whom you agree. And I always tell people, learn how to dialogue marriage discussion as a religious liberty issue. We've got a lot of mom and pop papers that help you do that. Don't just start, you know, we don't want the government to tell other people how to live their lives either. They're the last people that need to tell us what a good relationship is anyway. But this is about the government telling us what a good relationship is or what a marriage is. And we're saying, no, let us be able to define that in our own communities. And then educational freedom. Because educational freedom, access to good education is the key to liberty. It's the key to getting out of poverty. It's the key to overcoming violence as well as building up the family. And so we fight for those things. And you can talk those things even to people with whom you disagree and they go, that's a pretty good point. I never thought of it that way. And so if you can do that and show that you're not trying to force your view on somebody, but you are saying, hey, I have the right to have these views and I'm going to vote the way my conscience says, I think that's the best way to deal with it. And then the second thing is try to share Christ by turning the other cheek and being a good neighbor to them. Differentiate those two works. And I think that's the best way to do that. Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
You know, and realize, like I said, there's a lot of things that aren't political or Christians can be on both sides of an issue without tearing each other apart. These fundamental things, I think we have to be, those are things God says, you got to stand for me on that. And you got to let people know. But there are other issues. And I'll give you an example. Well, there's a pastor friend of mine. He wanted to protest something one time. I said, well, what are you going to protest? He said, I'm going to go protest this Clean Air Act. And I said, well, what's this about? He goes, well, I want clean air. And I said, well, I don't think anybody wants dirty air. So what are you talking about? And he goes, well, the truckers. And I said, oh, so the truckers say this legislation is going to really mess up their business. He goes, yeah. I said, okay. So I looked at it and I said, you know what? I think I'm on the side of the truckers. What? You're on the side of the truckers. And he had his collar on. And I said, yeah, I think they're right. I think that what you're saying actually it puts too much an onerous thing on them. And it's really not their responsibility. So I'm going to vote for them. And he said, well, then you got to take your collar off. And I said, how about you take your collar off too? And so we could disagree on that issue, right? We could. And we could go back to the Lord's table and we could go to church on Sunday. So we've got to differentiate those issues that are the church says this, not just my opinion, or this is what the scripture says, not just my opinion. And those opinion things, let's have a little bit more kindness with each other.
I think a little bit more kindness would go a long way in just about every conversation that takes place these days.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, before we wrap up, why don't you tell our listeners where they can learn more about the work that you're doing and get connected with the center?
Well, first of all, again, thanks for having me so that I can, you know, let people know that we're in DC for them. Our website is lcrlfreedom.org, lcrlfreedom.org. And when you go there, we've got tons of information, tons of resources, video resources, printed resources, and you'll be able to see our Facebook page there. You'll be able to see our YouTube channel, our Twitter feed. So you can get everything there if you go to that website. And by the way, we're trying to answer a lot of these questions that you're talking about today in what I call mom and pop type forms, where it can be something you can talk to your neighbor about or you can talk to your kids about. So go there and please just use those resources. And I hope and pray that it is a helpful thing to you.
We appreciate your taking some time today and we appreciate the work that you're doing on behalf of our church and our members out there in DC. It's a unique place to work and we appreciate that you have taken the challenge and are pounding the pavement for us.
Well, again, it's my pleasure. And you know, you can tell your dad that he's the guy that got me started on this all the way back in 2006. We had a class here in Washington, DC, and that's where some of the seeds of this were planted. And then I've done urban ministry in places where I had to deal with the politics of things. We got to do this so we can keep our voice free in this culture.
I think I may have actually sat in on part of that class when you were all up there, because, and I think it's a good thing that, just to underscore for our listeners, there are a lot of really faithful people working on the Hill. We have Lutherans who work as staff, as members of Congress. We interviewed Congressman Shimkus a week ago, and there's a lot of faithful Christians really working hard every day in our nation's capital, and they do need our prayers, and they're trying really hard. And again, we need to support each other as best we can.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. We do this thing called Two Kingdom Roundtable once a quarter, and we bring all kinds of people together just to let them know they're not by themselves. But there's a lot, you know, I got to underscore this to our listeners. There's a lot of Christians on the Hill. When I was working in Hollywood a few years back, there's a lot more Christians in Hollywood than you think. It's just that their voice is suppressed underneath. And all we have to do is learn how to become more of a public voice again. It's not going to make it any easier, but we can't let them silence the voice. And I think that's all that we're talking about here. And there's a lot of people working hard to make sure that doesn't happen.
And we appreciate everyone's hard work. So thank you again for being with us. And listeners, take a look at the Center's website, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Concordia Publishing House podcast. I pray that this time was valuable to your walk with Christ. We'd love to connect with listeners on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Concordia Pub. Visit cph.org for more resources to grow deeper in the gospel.